Hello again, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Panoramic Outdoors podcast. Just me and Sheldon hanging out here today.
Yep.
Tristan's at a bachelor party.
He's having fun while we're working like usual.
Living it up, yeah. We're two hardworking fellas here hanging out. We had a pretty good day today.
We did. We went down to the Forks. And today we worked with Manitoba Wildlife Federation to put on a kid's fish, which was successful, I guess. We had quite a few people come out.
Yeah, we had a few groups come out there.
And yeah, it was pretty cool because you get to kind of teach them how to tie some knots and show them how to bait hooks and like very novice kids, like never even held a fishing rod before.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. The fishing was a little bit slower than what we would have liked, but I think the heat had something to do with that.
Yeah. And the wind, it was windy too.
Yeah, it was windy as heck. Oh, heck.
Yeah, but yeah, it was good. And then, so we did that. And not only that, but there's quite a few like grown-ups that came out and fished with their kids as well that were asking a lot of questions, which is good.
Yeah, it was kind of more of a thing for like all novice ages, not just kids.
Yeah, and it was good because then you're promoting the sport, promoting, you know, being outside and everything else. So it was good. I had fun.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good event. I wish I would have been up, been able to get up top and taken some of the stuff that was going on up there. I know they had some presentations and some demonstrations and stuff like that, and a bunch of booths up top.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. And then they had a bunch of demonstrations, like they showed how to fillet fish, right?
Yeah.
And a bunch of other stuff. So it's probably a good day if you're up there. But yeah, I didn't make it up there either. Yeah. I just burnt my face off at the river.
Man, it was hot. Still hot out.
I know.
Hotter than fucking the Bandit's pistol out there.
Hotter than a pistol.
It's so hot out that the wind did give a little bit of reprieve, but it was like, it's a warm wind.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I've heard the expression before, standing in front of a blow dryer. The wind was doing.
Oh, that's funny. But yeah, and then we came back to Clandenboy, which we heard today that some people call it Clanden Girl.
Yeah.
Came back here and Chase made some deer steak and what, salmon that you caught out on the coast there a couple months ago?
Yeah, some deer from last fall.
How many fish did you get out there?
We weren't out for long, maybe a couple hours, probably, well, more than a couple, probably 4 hours or so. And we landed about, I think, 8 or 9 salmon altogether.
Oh, yeah.
It was Andrew, the guy I went with, said it was a pretty slow day for,
oh, really?
For that, yeah.
And what was, like, the biggest one?
The biggest one wasn't a monster, but we can't remember what it measured out to be. It was probably about a 7-8-pound fish.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So right on.
That was good.
And then that was with who again? Andrew?
Yeah, it was Andrew's West Coast Adventures.
There. So we have, there's that video on YouTube, so if anyone's listening, you can check that out.
Yeah, that went up. That's pretty much full action of the trip, or the highlights anyways, and caught a bunch of prawns out there with them, mm-hmm. which was awesome.
And how'd you guys cook those up? Just like boil them or what?
We had, when I was out there, he cooked up a bunch because he had a bunch from the previous fish that he went on.
Oh, yeah.
And he the way we cooked those, he deep fried them in like beer batter almost.
Oh, yeah.
And then we had them in fish tacos. And then a couple nights ago, we had them here. And I fried them in some garlic butter and tossed them on tomato-based pasta sauce and had them pasta. Yeah, it was good.
So would they be like pretty similar to like shrimp that you buy at Safeway? Frozen shrimp kind of idea or what?
They're a little bit different. I don't know how to describe them. They seemed like they were a little bit sweeter, and okay. They're just, I don't know if there's just because they're caught fresh, mm-hmm. why they're different, but yeah, they're good. They're really good.
Yeah it looks sweet. So yeah, that was your trip, and then you went camping, right? Didn't you by yourself there for a night? And
That was before, so we spent a couple of days in Kelowna there, and then I went camping for a couple of nights, and I was hoping to get some, oh, look at that fucking squirrel right there.
That's your enemy.
Yeah. Anyways, I went camping for a couple of nights. It was gorgeous, gorgeous country. And I was hoping to get out on a couple of the rivers to wet a line, but they had like record snowpacks that year. And it was just full rivers everywhere you went. And I went to check out a couple different spots and no dice. So,
yeah, I went like this past winter. I was out at Scotch Creek, BC for snowmobiling. And like, yeah, a lot of the guys, like even in Revelstoke and stuff like that, they're all saying like record snowfall years. So there's probably rivers are just gushing up there.
Yeah, well, they had a bunch of flooding and stuff in BC too.
Oh, yeah.
Right after we left there. So,
right.
It's crazy. Right. Yeah, you went on a couple of adventures too here lately.
Yeah, I went to Tobin Lake, Saskatchewan. So if you looked on a Manitoba map and went straight west of the pod in that Nipawin area, that's where I went for a stag. So we would fish during the day and party at night, and it was okay. We caught enough fish to have some fish fries, and but yeah, it was a good resort, and yeah, had a lot of fun. And then got home on the Monday, worked for a couple of days, and then went to Thompson for 5 days to go on a fishing trip. And then we ended up at a camp, and then we portaged into Kuskokwim Falls, which is the tallest falls in Manitoba. Fished under the falls there, which was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, that looked wicked, man.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like, just to, you know, just sit there and just the sound of, like, that water, like, how much flow there is, like, it's how much power it has. Yeah. And, like, yeah, and we caught really good all week and caught some big jacks. And, yeah, it was a good trip. And I went with a bunch of family and friends. So it's one of those things we kind of do every summer. But, yeah, it was good. We had two good trips back to back. And now I'm kind of just been licking my wounds here for a couple of weeks, just kind of trying to stay chill for a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it gets busy when they're touring around and working full time and stuff like that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Tristan, he's not here with us, like we said, but he went on a couple good trips, had some good fishing on Lake Winnipeg. And then he headed up to Clearwater too, which they had a good trip and went to a few different lakes up there, and we'll have to talk about that on another episode. He's got a bunch of stuff lined up for us, so that'll be a good one.
Yeah. Be a lot of good stories from that one, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
And then Tyler went, that was who all went to Clearwater? Him and Tyler,
Carly, Courtney, and oh no, Courtney didn't go. Randy went. And I think that was it, just the four of them. Mm. I believe.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's all pretty much caught up for us lately. We went, did some scouting a little bit there.
Oh yeah.
For the elk and stuff. And, yeah, we're just sitting here right now having a beer with each other.
Like having to have a beer.
Yeah.
Like rubbing the glass on my face because it's so hot out.
Yeah, you look like you got a bit of sweat dripping down your face right now. We have to turn the AC off in here so we wouldn't pick it up on the mics here, but
we might have to turn it on.
Yeah. And hopefully our audio is sounding better today. I think we got it figured out. We had a couple episodes there that
weren't. That's too one thing I guess we could just apologize to everyone. Like, we had some good content and just baffled it by crappy audio.
Yeah.
So I think we got it figured out, or you and Tristan kinda got it figured out.
I think we're kind of still learning quite a bit on this podcast and other things. We're just doing everything ourselves. So, yeah, hopefully this one sounds a little better than the last couple.
Yeah. So the big, I guess, today we're just going to be talking about in the summertime, it's usually scouting and permissions and, you know, all that fun stuff. So we thought we'd maybe go over some of the stuff that we do, some of the things we do, some tricks that we... Not really tricks, but maybe tactics to scouting and setting up cameras, tree stands, whatever.
Yeah.
And I go through some of that stuff.
Yeah, talking some permission tactics and things that we've done and stuff like that. And that's all part of kind of the scouting game too.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to start with scouting or permission?
I guess we can start with scouting because you need to scout before you can even get permission, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of have to. And that's like one of the biggest things, I guess, for myself when I'm scouting is I put on a lot of miles on my pickup driving around to spots where I, like, known spots where I've maybe hunted before or have seen deer before, depending on what I'm scouting for, I guess. But
yeah,
for whitetail, a lot of things that I do is maybe not normal, I guess. And then when it comes to scouting, it's even worse because sometimes I'll go and I'll drive to a field that I'm hunted before or whatever, and I'll go and just sit in my truck and wait till dark and see what crosses the road or see what crosses the pasture.
Yeah.
And I'll like put in hours doing that to try to find, you know, kind of their natural trail, like their natural path.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of times you can pattern a deer doing that too. We did that quite a bit for a few years.
Yeah.
Back where we grew up there.
Yeah, it's actually one of my buddies. I can't remember how the story went, but he had permission in this one field or whatever, and he was scouting it that summer or something. Like, I can't remember how it went, but anyways, he was scouting it, and he'd always see this buck right on the approach every like 4 or 5 days or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then I think it was opening day of bow hunting. He went and just sat like 30 yards off the approach into this field bow hunting, and yeah, the buck came out first night, the exact same spot where he's seen him like half a dozen times.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's how he harvested his buck. But yeah, it's funny, those deer kind of have patterns they kind of stick to until they get thrown off, right?
Yeah, yeah. We kind of got screwed by that before though too. I remember, like I said, back home we were patterning this one deer, and it was a nice, quite mature buck, and like clockwork, almost daily he was like, we could look at our watch kit, 7 o'clock, we gotta get out there, park the trucks, see where he's at, park the truck, 15 minutes later, out he walks, goes out, crosses the road into the field that we got permission on, good to go, archery season opens up, we get out there, and...
disappears.
Yeah.
Gone.
Gonzo.
That always happens.
So,
that's the biggest shot in the nuts ever.
Yeah.
You know, you put in all that time, and you're like, you know what, this might be my year, and then you don't see him.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah. Sucks. It's crazy.
Until the last day of rifle season, then that day's over. The next day you wake up and he's standing there again.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, scouting and the same thing. Like I do, like a lot of times too, is I'll go for like maybe a walk and, you know, just go and sit and watch a field, or, you know, there's a bunch of different ways you can scout. And I think my biggest thing is just doing it more personally, doing it myself, than maybe rather than setting up a bunch of trail cams and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. You like to put the miles on, get out there, look at stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But trail cams are obviously like very good to use.
Yeah. I like using trail cams a lot. A couple areas that we hunt are quite a ways away. So like I'm talking, we're driving 100 miles or more to get to some of our spots, especially elk.
Yeah.
Deer hunting spots too. A lot of times I'll put them up just to see what's in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And even like lots of the areas we hunt are just like big bush. We don't tend to hunt the agriculture too much.
Right.
So the cameras in those places are pretty much there. You can see deer activity and elk activity and stuff like that. But the biggest factor for us scouting up there is finding the areas that they're moving through,
right,
and that they're living in, right? And they move around a little bit throughout the year as seasons change. But generally, if you find an area that the deer or elk are in, there's a good chance they're going to be back there at some point.
And
especially in the fall for deer are pretty patternable like that. And our biggest thing is when we find a good area, we know of a good area, you don't necessarily go back to that area without knowing that it's the deer are in there, because they could, depending on the years, like if there's a drought or if it's flooding or whatever, you know, they might shift their travels a bit and they might not be in that area. So
yeah,
even though it's been a good area in the past, doing a little scout prior to maybe hanging a stand or something is always a good idea, and make sure they're still traveling that area. And that's where this trail cams come in handy too, because if you put your trail camera up in that area, you can watch them and pattern them a little better.
Right.
And Yeah, if they're, so you just watch the dates and see how often they're in there, when they're in there, mm-hmm. and time of days and stuff. And that's
like the other thing too, is like, for the difference between me and you when it comes to maybe deer hunting, is I hunt a lot more agriculture. So when I'm putting on those miles, like, there's a few things that I kind of go through in my head is, you know, those areas where I'm normally maybe going to be hunting, or I've hunted in the past, well, I'll go and check them out, see what's there for like crops. And not only that, but like, it helps me out when duck and goose season comes, because I'm like, okay, well, the barley fields are over here and the pea fields are over here.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, you know where that farmer put those fields for that year, right?
Yeah.
When you're doing a summer scout or whatever. So yeah, I love driving around it in the summertime and checking things out.
Is there a crop that you find is better for, like, that the deer will be drawn to more than another?
Well, I don't know. Like, for me, I have my own thing, I guess, and my dad has his own thing, and probably every hunter out there has their own, like, ideal hunting,
yeah.
you know, acres or whatever. But, like, I always found when they freshly swath canola, I find a lot of deer like to go and eat the flowers off them. So archery season, if you can get, a late swath where it's kind of fresh,
yeah,
I find that works really well. And then, obviously, as the year kind of progresses, you know, wheat fields are always good. Alfalfa always have deer in it.
Yeah.
So if they're, you know, not, say if they didn't cut their second cut on hay, you can go and sit in an alfalfa field and you'll usually see deer. And then it gets later and later in the year. And especially if you get some snow early in, say, November, you're looking at cut cornfields, like, you know, it's like gold.
Yeah. Mine. Yeah. That's really high, rich fat for them. Eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And easy to get to, right? Cause they're sticking up out of the snow quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's good for them, but
yeah.
But yeah, that's what I always look for. And but yeah, just putting on those miles, it kind of reminds me of when we went turkey hunting. It was like the day before and we're like putting on miles.
Oh yeah.
Giving her, and it was like right before dark and
trying to find a turkey.
Right before dark, I'm like, there's one. Like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. It's funny how it comes, like, sometimes decision comes down to is just,
yeah,
you know, you put on, we were scouting for hours, and I mean, in the realm of scouting, generally my thought is, you know, you put in twice as much time scouting as you do hunting, and you probably there's a good chance you're gonna be successful. So we got into that turkey game a little bit late,
yeah,
in the season,
and we're new,
yeah, and so. We're totally noobs to it, so yeah.
And that, well, the thing was there too is that I previously, before you came out to hunt that weekend, I went out for a few drives, and I've seen turkeys in different spots.
Yeah.
So I kind of knew the general area where I wanted to be looking. So we, like, drove all those areas, and it was, like, my last spot. I'm like, hey, yeah, if there's going to be a turkey down this road, we might be in luck. And we just caught the tail end of one crossing the road, and we're like, holy shit, there's one right here.
Literally, like, probably a minute sooner, we probably wouldn't have seen it, and like literally 15 seconds later we would never seen that. Like, who knows how many birds we actually drove past,
yeah, exactly,
while we were out there. Didn't get on. Yeah,
but yeah. And then so we went what was that, Friday night, right before dark, seeing these turkeys cross the road. So we're like, well, let's stop and make a call and see what happens, just to, you know, fuck around a bit.
Yeah.
So we got walk to this fence line, and Chase makes a few calls, and we're standing there, and then we look, and they're coming. We're like, holy shit, they're coming. Like, what are we going to do?
Yeah, they're coming right down the fence line.
Yeah.
There's a couple heads clucking at us.
Yeah.
And it was funny because, like, I've messed around with turkey calls before. Like, when I was younger, I bought a couple, and intentions of going turkey hunting, never did go, but literally have not touched a turkey call for a long time.
Right.
And those turkey calls I bought that morning.
Sleeping in the Cabela's parking lot, waiting for it to open.
Yeah. And, we went out and called the turkey, and that night with two turkeys came in.
Yeah, that was
great. That one turkey was kind of weird looking. I was talking to Frank about that.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, Frank Baldwin.
That white one.
Yeah. And it wasn't completely white, but it was like a color phase. And
yeah.
And he said they get some different pigmentations and stuff like that. I don't know.
Right. And then that was the thing too, is, so we'll probably touch on this later on about getting permissions, but so we were where these turkeys were, it was on Crown land. So it was basically anyone can hunt there, public land. But there was a farmer that has farmyard on the next section over, so we thought we'd go and see him and just have a chat with him and see what's going on.
I think our big concern was, you know, there's quite a few farmyards and stuff like that, and just people live in rural areas that might have their own turkeys.
Yeah, that was another. Especially when you see one with white feathers, and you're like, is that domesticated or what?
Yeah, what's going on with that turkey?
So we ripped into his yard. Super nice guy. Comes out, and we have a little chat with him, and we're just like, yeah, man, we're hunting over here. We just thought we'd come and let you know that we're going to be hunting there in the morning in case you hear a shot or whatever, and kind of just gave him a heads up, which I thought was, you know, I think a good thing is for a hunter to do.
Yeah.
And then he gave us a lot of information about these turkeys. Like, yeah, they're in the area. There's a big tom. There's a couple jakes. And
yeah.
So it was good. Like,
yeah, and then he was saying, you know, you go down the road a couple miles and hang right there, and there's another group hanging out there.
Yeah.
This and that, he said. Go shoot the shit out of turkeys. Just don't shoot them in my yard.
Yeah.
All right. We didn't want to. We just want to make sure we're all on the same page.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny, though. It's one of my least favorite things to do as a hunter is going to ask for permission.
Oh, I know. It sucks.
Because it can go either way. And it's, I don't know why I get, like, weird about it, because what's the guy, the worst thing you do is say, no, you can't hunt there.
No, I know. But it's just like asking someone for $10. Like, you don't ever want to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you're like, you're using someone else's property. You know? Like, for your own gains, I guess, in a way. And it's kind of hard to, in the same way, it's kind of hard for me, I guess.
Yeah. I always think about, it's always in the back of my mind too, is like you said, that farmer's really not gaining anything from letting you hunt on his property. And you got to think too, how many other guys have bothered him and asked him. And he's thinking, when he sees you come walking up, is he thinking, oh, for fuck's sake, it's just another hunter coming up, bug me about hunting on my property.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. So then after we got, we didn't even have to get permission from him, but we talked to that dude, raced back to Neepaw. We were about an hour away from Neepaw. We raced back to Neepaw, got all our gear ready, got up in the morning, start driving down the road, and what do we see in the trees?
Yeah.
And like all over this ditch. It's like 20 turkeys.
Yeah, turkeys roosting right on the highway. And I guess hens were roosted still, and there was, was there 7 toms there?
At least, yeah. Yeah,
for gobbling their heads off there. That's pretty funny. We put a little clip out of that on Instagram, and you can see them just, it's pretty cool. I've never really seen it before, obviously, because I haven't turkey hunted, but having all the turkeys just like, I guess that's why they call it, is it like, it's almost like Rolling Thunder or the Thunder Chickens.
Thunder Chickens.
It's just like all of them, all at once were just.
Yeah. What does it sound like? So we see all these things. Now we're pumped up.
Yeah.
We're like, okay, let's get the F into this pasture. Let's get our decoy set up. Let's get in there. So we go and we pull into the opposite side of the road, to another piece of ground to park the truck, and we'd walked in probably, I don't know, half a kilometer, let's say, and when we're getting out of the truck, we heard one right away.
Yeah. So we get it. It's like, in my mind, this is perfect turkey hunting weather.
Yeah,
I think it was like -7 when we went out there, right?
Yeah. It was. Yeah.
Or maybe maybe 7.
Something
I can't remember. It was chilly.
Yeah.
Chillier. And
it was cool enough that we were wearing toques and like neck warmers and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
and just crisp, cool, calm morning.
Yeah.
You hear everything that moves in the bush. And as soon as we get out of the truck, kind of shut the doors quietly, and there's one gobbling.
We're like, man, this is done. Like, this is over. Like,
yeah.
This is our first turkey hunt ever, and it's going to be over in 25 minutes.
Yeah. The thing that, really got me thinking about that is after we set up in this beautiful meadow with rolling hills and put our decoys up on top of the hill about, like, 30 yards away.
Yeah.
And started calling, and he just starts hammering back to us, and he's coming in on a string.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we are literally looking at each other chuckling like little kids.
Oh, yeah.
This is unbelievable. First time turkey hunting, and this is going to be over in like 20 minutes.
Yeah. And that was the thing, too, is like, we had, so when we talked to that farmer, he also told us that there was a pure white tom. Is that what he said?
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. Remember? Because I'm like, man, if we see that white Tom tomorrow and we get it, like, that's going to be, like, unbelievable. Don't you remember that?
No.
I'm pretty sure that happened. But anyways, I was thinking when I'm sitting there, so I was doing the filming and stuff, so I didn't have a weapon. I was just sitting behind Chase filming and so on and so forth. And I was thinking the whole time, like, if this is that white turkey, I'm like,
well, I think pumped. It was the color phase one we thought that maybe you've seen. Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
White feathers, whatever.
Yeah.
Some white
he feathers. Had some white feathers on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I was or thinking the whole time. Whatever, and I was looking over at you. Yeah. We're just giggling. We're like, this is so cool. Yeah. We're going to be done here right away. Anyways, you can just carry on because you were hunting, I guess. That
and yeah, so that Tom was coming in, and then he ended up hanging up on a bit of a barrier that we put ourselves in between.
Yeah.
Which is a good lesson that won't do again.
Yeah.
Anyways. Cut to the chase. We didn't end up getting that turkey. He ran off.
Yeah.
And we couldn't find another one.
He gone.
But remember all the noise we heard sitting there? Remember that duck that was flying around?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That duck. And he wouldn't shut up.
No.
It was a chick duck.
It was like an angry hen mallard flying around, just doing circles around us, essentially.
And quacking.
And yeah, imagine the quietest morning in the bush, and all you hear is
it's like someone's annoying cell phone ring.
We had swans, we had geese, yeah. Cranes, that duck.
That duck was annoying.
Yeah, I was actually getting ready to shoot that duck if we come around.
Yeah, so that turkey didn't come, but it turned out to be a good day because we went for like kind of a hike and went and checked that. Like crown.
Yeah, we scouted out some wicked area there.
Yeah.
That was beautiful back there.
Yeah. And there's like elk tracks back there and deer tracks. And
yeah.
Lots of like rolling hills and
yeah.
And you could tell it was maybe hunted before. There's a couple of different like blind ish areas.
Yeah.
Where they had
chair sitting on top of the hill. That was pretty cool.
And then we got to that bank. Like that looked down on the, I guess what would that be? The Assiniboine River?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And there's sweet. like an old campground or something back there.
Yeah.
From back in the day.
Oh, that was cool. You could see everything from up there.
Yeah. But yeah, that was our turkey hunt 2018.
Yeah.
In the spring.
Yeah, it was fun.
So I guess we still got tags, so we'll try it again in the fall, I guess, if we want.
Yeah. I think the big difference between spring and the fall is that I don't think they call in the fall if I'm correct.
So yeah. What do you do? Just look for them?
I think, yeah, you just try and catch them in between or... Oh, yeah. Jump shoot him or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not really too worried, but I got enough animals I want to
usually
go after in the fall.
That's the big thing for me that, like, I definitely wanted to try every avenue I can, and turkey is a good way to get out in the spring.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of stuff, like you said, I got on the books for the fall.
Yeah, exactly. What was, what did Frank say there? Like they had a program where they released a bunch of turkeys in Manitoba this last couple of years, right?
Yeah.
I think, and I don't quote me, but I think it was like 400 plus between just north of Minnedosa and it ran all the way south to like Clarney, didn't it?
Or something? Yeah. No, they repositioned some turkeys because they were, I mean, they're doing quite well apparently in the province, he was saying.
Yeah.
And so they moved them from... down south there, I think like Pembina Valley or something.
Okay.
And they moved them up north.
Oh yeah.
To that area, to that Neepawa.
But didn't whatever. He say something like, yeah, I thought he said something like 400 turkeys or something.
Yeah, they moved.
That's a lot of birds, really.
Yeah. But I mean, big landscape, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a little bit off topic, I guess, on talking about, what were we talking about? Scouting.
Yeah, scouting.
Yeah.
Well, we had a little scouting permission in there.
Yeah, scouting permission, whatever.
Yeah.
So I guess generally you're hunting big bush, putting out cameras. I'm hunting agriculture land, doing a lot of miles, a lot of maybe sitting and watching. And another thing that I do like to do when I'm hunting, and I don't know if many people do it, but I do in bow hunting, is say if I go committed myself to a night of hunting, right, and the wind's shit. That I don't even want to go into my stand because the wind's so crap. I'll actually go into that same piece of property and sit opposite of like my tree stand and just watch what my tree stand and see if anything's coming, going.
Yeah.
Because the biggest thing is like when you go hunting, especially archery, when you're got to get in close proximity, is that you're basically always playing the wind, right? So if you go up to and in your tree stand, the wind's shit and it, you know, scares off a few deer or whatever, that basically screws up their whole pattern.
Yeah.
And like we were talking about earlier, like patterning deer, that's one thing you don't want to do is screw that up.
Yeah.
You want them to come out the same spots every night. And if, as soon as you screw that up once, then it's over.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's another way of scouting that I do, is even in hunting season, I'm still scouting.
Exactly. Yeah. That's, I mean, that's a big thing for me too. I find I have trouble making enough time to go scouting.
Right.
So, I mean, hunting season is when I usually spend most of my time in the bush. So you try and find as much as you can, but it makes for slower progress for success.
Right.
Because lots of times you go to an area, but my problem is I sit in the stand and I'm thinking, all right, is there a better spot? Like just up the trail or what's going on here? So sometimes I'll sit for a bit and then, okay, I got to go for a walk. Check this out up here. And then you do that year after year and you get to know the area quite a bit. But what I want to start doing is getting to scout more and more in the off season.
Right.
So spring is a good season to do that when there's no bugs around and you can actually see lots of the scrapes from the previous year for deer and the rubs and stuff. And then for me, a big thing is putting boots on the ground and putting miles on my boots too, because really getting down there and seeing what's happening, what's the ground look like. I mean, we utilize Google Earth quite a bit just to see
kind of landscape.
Where you find some bottlenecks, swamps and stuff like that, where you're not going to really look for deer and stuff.
And that's a big thing too, like right there, like compared from what you do to how I scout, is like, that's a good point, is that you can go scouting and not even see an animal, but know what they're doing by tracks or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Rubs from previous years, or you would have a better idea maybe what's in the area. You know what I mean? Like fresh tracks and, like you said, bottleneck areas or whatever, compared to like, say what I do is when I'm just sitting and watching and, you know, glassing fields with my binoculars, looking for deer and seeing where they're coming out. And yeah, so getting your boots a little muddy and getting some miles on your feet is probably a really good way to scout, even if you don't even see an animal.
Yeah. I mean, Tristan and I went out a couple of weeks. No, on what's the date today? We went on a long weekend there on the Monday, and we had a trail cam up in our deer area, and then I had one up in our elk area, and we put another one up in the elk area there, and
you put up trail cams.
We took some cars down and stuff like that and checked some photos. We didn't spend too much time in the deer hunting area, just because I know it's a good area, and I think those deer moved to a bit of a different wintering ground. So as we expected, there wasn't a whole lot on the camera. Seen a few pictures for the deer, and then we went to our elk hunting area and we put probably another 8 miles on there. Walking around and scouting some areas out, and took that camera down and didn't really set that one up perfectly. Took it down, looked at it, said the card was full. So sometimes that's a good thing, most of the time not a great thing. So reviewing the pictures, as I expected, it was just shooting off because it was
shooting off.
I'm just taking photos because it was getting triggered by the couple of willows in front of it.
Oh yeah.
So had 10,000 pictures to go through. But got some good pictures of some elk on there, a couple young bulls, a couple family groups.
Oh yeah. What was I gonna say there about that? Anyway, sorry, go on. Because I don't know what I was gonna say.
So yeah, and then I think scouting for elk hunting is a big thing for us too, and we're hunting all public land right now there too, so
yeah,
it's all kind of big areas, lots of bush, and the areas we hunt, I mean, the better you know the land, the better you can set up for a kill on an elk, right?
Right.
And, you know, when he's calling somewhere where he's going to be, where we can catch him, come across, we want to try and find a spot where he might hang up or something like that and set up for it. And so there's lots of things to think about, and it's nice to, like, get out there and check stuff out and just,
yeah, you know. So when you go, like, I'm not too familiar with scouting for elk, I guess, but so when you're going to set up a trail cam in that, say, that area, so we're talking like Inner Lake bush area,
yeah,
basically Inner Lake Manitoba bush area, what are you looking for?
Well, we've previously seen some elk in that area before,
yeah,
so and I've been in the area before, and so I set that camera up on a area that's had a couple trails coming through it.
Oh yeah.
And it's just kind of in a meadow, and so I put the camera up there to see what I could capture.
Right.
I've since moved it to a wallow area, so I'll leave it up there right through to the past the fall.
Like a wallow area, as like what's that?
Yeah, so it's the area that the elk will come to kind of. The wallows generally in the fall. It's kind of like a scrape for a deer.
Oh yeah.
So they'll roll around and piss in it and
yeah,
get all muddied up in it and stuff like that. And yeah. So, and there, it's quite dry out there right now, and it's the only water in quite a ways that we've seen. And it was definitely used within the last 12 hours when we got there. So we. Right. Put that camera up there, and hopefully we'll catch some good stuff coming through in the summertime, even just to cool down, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. Get
your drink.
When it's plus 38 out, and if I was an elk, I'd probably go for a dip.
Oh, for sure. I was flying the other day back on the east side of Lake Manitoba.
Yeah.
And I've never seen this before, but we were flying back, and it was a hot day. Well, not as hot as today, but there was a moose laying down, like, in the water.
Oh yeah.
Like, and the water was like halfway up his body.
Yeah. I've heard of that, but for like, I don't know, it wasn't because of the heater. It could have been, but I know, a buddy of mine or somebody was telling me a story that they were going down a quad trail and they looked and they thought they seen like a moose horn in the slough, and they're like, what the fuck? And they stopped, and all of a sudden this moose like jumped up and took off. And he was laying there in the slough with his, like, basically his head just out of the water.
Really?
And they thought it was either because of the bugs or because of the heat.
Yeah.
Like one, and probably both, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, exactly. It is kind of crazy. So, we got, you got trail cams up in our hunting area where we put in for a draw for this fall.
Yeah.
So, me, you, Jameson, and Tristan.
Yeah.
I'll put in for that area. So hopefully we should find out within the next, 3 weeks?
Yeah, I think they come out in August.
And when does it open? It's the end of August, right, for that
area? Yeah.
Yeah.
End of August. Kinda. So
it's kind of shitty that we have like 3 weeks to or 3 weeks till we hear, and then another 3 weeks till we can organize something.
Yeah, it's not the greatest system.
No, sure. It's not. But
yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I think we got a pretty good chance of the draw in there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hopefully we can get on some animals there.
Yeah. And the best part about that is it overlaps with whitetail as well. So,
yeah,
you can, you know, go in there and set up if you wanted to for if you see some nice deer on your trail cam.
Yeah,
get archery tag. Set up for some whitetail.
Yeah. But I think this year, too, we might actually try and get on some private land if we can pinpoint where some elk are.
Yeah,
there's a herd there or something.
I would like to go up probably like mid-August, maybe for a night, and go back and just camp for the night or whatever.
Yeah,
and maybe just tour around and talk to some people and
yeah,
some locals. And
yeah,
I mean, the worst, like, and that probably brings us right to our next discussion topic is permissions, right?
Yeah.
And I think one of the best things to do is when you're out and about, even if you're not even looking for permission, just going to talk to people.
Yeah.
And like we did with that guy with turkey hunting, we didn't even have to go and talk to him, but we did.
Yeah.
We got a lot of good information from him. And not only that, but we gave him a little bit of, like, maybe a little bit more respect than he probably got from other hunters that hunted around that area.
Yeah.
Just because we gave him a heads up that we were turkey hunting with a shotgun. Yeah. So if he did hear a shot, that was us or whatever. Yeah.
And it's always nice. I think, like, if I was living in the neighborhood there, you know, if I see a truck parked in the bush and,
exactly,
you know, or see a couple of guys walking around you and you're thinking, you know, he's the only farmyard around there for a couple of miles. And
yeah, he was.
You were parked right across from his yard and he's probably thinking, all right, what are these guys up to here?
Yeah.
Here we go, check the sheds, make sure everything's there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or like, is it a stolen vehicle sitting over there? Like, these guys up to no good? And then you go over and talk to him. No, we're just hunting over here. And then he's kind of gets a, at least probably.
And like, that's you know, kind of one of those unwritten rules when you are going to get for going to ask for permission. And, you know, a few things that I always do, or I try to always do if I can remember them all. There's quite a list, really, if you think about it.
Yeah.
But like, try to, when you go and ask for permission, tell them who's in your, like, not who's in your hunting party, but tell them there's three of us.
Yeah.
You know, I know like a lot of dudes that are farmers will get a guy to come into their door and be like, yeah, can I hunt on your land? And yeah, okay, go ahead. And they go drive by, and then all of a sudden there's 12 guys out there.
Yeah.
And he's like, what the fuck, man? Like I said, you could go hunt there. Yeah. It's not your whole hunting party.
Exactly. Yeah. You gotta kind of be, put it all out there for them and let them, you know.
Exactly. So yeah, that's one thing I always do is tell them how many people are in my hunting party, say.
Yeah.
Or how many people would be with me or whatever.
Yeah.
Tell them what I drive.
Yeah.
Because like, why would you want them to report your truck
being
somewhere where it maybe shouldn't be? But if he knows what I drive, then he's like, oh, it's just that dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Or the big thing is too, like if somebody else goes ripping around in there and you're like,
yeah,
you know, oh, there's a white Chevy in there raking ruts and whatever. And, you know, you'd be like, oh, I'm driving my Dodge, man.
Yeah.
Wasn't me. Sorry. But I just
think those are kind of the three of the biggest things. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and what you're hunting, what, you know, what you're using to hunt.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of things, I guess, that I normally try to lay it out there right at the start. And
you try and make yourself kind of get to know the farmer a little bit, and he gets to know you a little bit. Makes him a little bit more comfortable with somebody that's going on his land to hunt.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? Because it's his property. He owns it. That's his.
Yeah.
And if it's farmland, that's his livelihood, man. Like,
yeah,
you don't want to be messing that up for him.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
And like that's the thing too, is like there are some farmers out there or landowners that like that there's a presence of a hunter there, you know, because we're the ones that are, you know, in a way checking their fences, you know, or making sure the gates are closed. And those are things that you always want to do. But, you know, I've, you know, a piece of property that we hunt on quite a bit. We ask the farmer permission every year, regardless. He always gives it to us. We've had it my dad's had it for years. But my dad walks that piece all the time. And if he finds a broken fence or whatever, lets the guy know. And I think they kind of appreciate that.
Yeah, it's a good common courtesy there.
Right.
For you. Like you, he lets you on his land and you can say, all right, well, you know, you got something going on over here or, you know, who knows what else you might find. So that's all part of respecting the property too, right?
Oh, for sure.
Like that's another big thing you want to do for yourself, not only to give you a good image, but to give hunters in general a good image, right? Because if you go in there and you make a mess, you leave all your trash and rut up his field and, you know, or you're in a pasture and you're not closing gates and there's cattle running around all over the place, you know, he's not going to let anybody back in there. He won't trust anybody he doesn't know.
No, exactly. And not only that, but farmers' best friends are other farmers. They go, you know what I mean? Like if they got a reindeer, whatever they do, and they have coffee with Buddy at Chicken Delight or whatever.
Yeah.
They're going to be saying, hey man, that Chase there, he was on my land and left the gate open and did this and did that. And then all of a sudden your name's in the mud.
Yeah.
You're not going to get any permission anywhere.
Exactly.
And not only that, but then it just, like you say, it gives a bad name to anybody that wants to enjoy the outdoors and hunt on, you know, private property.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Big thing too, I find is, lots of the farmers are hunters themselves sometimes. Yeah. Right. So, generally, archery season is pretty close to the harvest for them or right around that area when they're dealing with everything. So I find a lot of the farmers will give you permission for archery and they'll say, you know, woody hunting, you know, and I always say, you know, I'm just going in for archery, and then I'm not going to be doing, I'm not going to be doing any, you know, rifle hunting or whatever. When archery season's done, I'm done hunting in there.
Yeah.
And then he'll say, okay, yeah, that's fine, because I'm going in there for rifle. I like to leave it for myself or my son or whatever.
See that all the time.
Yeah.
And that's another like valid point I'd like to point out is like, if you're going to get permissions from a farmer, especially, don't go 2 days before season when they're in the middle of swathing, harvesting, combining, whatever they're doing. Go there in the summertime where it might be a little bit slower. They're done spraying or whatever, and go and talk to them. Because I know if I was running a business and somebody was coming to my door when I'm trying to, you know, or doing whatever, right?
Well, not even combining, your door. Yeah, you see
trying
guys
to find you.
Trying to find them on the combine and stopping the combine in the field. And it's, oh, my God.
Yeah. But, that's. I think that's a good point, is just, especially archery hunting. Like, when it gets to black powder rifle seasons, generally they're close to being done anyways.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all part of the respect for the farmers and their stuff too, right? Going back to that being their livelihood, their land.
Yeah.
And you're just, to them, recreating on their property.
Do you ever, like give the farmer anything? Like, I know I've heard of guys like, maybe not in Canada as much, but down south I know guys like basically rent fields.
Yeah.
Rent land, I guess, basically.
The acreage, for hunting. Yeah. They like a lease, land lease. Kind of thing. Whatever. Yeah. That doesn't happen too often up here. Bird hunting, I know they do quite a bit. They'll charge per gun.
Oh, yeah.
For going into fields around here. That's for sure. Because
I
know a lot of Americans that are coming up and they're paying. They'll pay the money and then.
Or bottles of whiskey or whatever. Yeah.
So, I mean, a bottle is always a cheap way to get on. If you're going big game hunting and you're going to lock up some permission, and you might not have exclusive rights for that land.
Yeah.
But just to get permission, you know, having a bottle of whiskey in the back of the truck to hand over is always. Man. Yeah.
There's one thing that we always, well, my dad has always done, and I've kind of picked up his habits and the way he does things a lot. But the one property owner that we hunt on, every year, or the year after, when he goes in the summertime and talk to him about getting permission, he always takes him a couple bundles of sausage or whatever and be like, this is like what I shot on your land last year. Here, try it out.
Oh, they love that too.
This guy loves that. Like maybe they're all sitting in the bottom of his freezer, never opened. But
unless they're a cattle farmer or something.
Yeah, dad still does it. He still gives it to them, and but, I think they appreciate it because they keep on letting us go out there. And
oh, for sure, and to see that that's something that's come off their land, and I've had lots when I'm bird hunting. Guys say, you know, I wouldn't mind a couple birds if you can do that.
Yeah. And
yeah, no problem. That's fine with us.
Yeah.
If you're going to let us hunt on the land, you know, and it's, it's a small cost for getting permission out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just the same thing. Like when you're talking about kind of like the etiquette of getting permissions is like, I think we've kind of already touched on it, but like, make sure you're getting permission for each season, different animals. Like, don't go in there assuming that you, just because you got permission to go shoot some ducks, that you have permission to go and shoot a deer a month later.
Yeah.
And like, that being said, is like, if you're setting up blinds or tree stands, you know, make sure that you're picking up your shit, you know, like,
yeah,
if you have garbage or whatever. And not only that, but like, I don't know. Like, I'm pretty sure a lot of guys don't like that you've got a, you know, a 10 by 12 tree stand built up in their trees, you know.
Yeah,
like get a portable tree stand, put it in there, get it out of there if you're not going to use it, you know.
Yeah. Kind of leave. It's always nice, what I like to say is either like leave it as you found it or leave it in better shape than you found it, kind of thing. And you'll earn a lot of respect that way.
And I mean, if you can't drag your deer out of the field or the bush and you think that you need to get your truck in there, well, maybe you shouldn't be hunting there. You know, like, you don't need to be taking a truck into a guy's field.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everyone has done it, or we will do it.
Yeah.
If it's,
that's, I mean, that's a big thing too, when you're getting permission, is to find out what you're allowed to do there. Like, yeah, if you're true. In a pasture or something, I'm sure they'll let you go. But that's another thing you really need to be clear on, is making sure you can get a truck or an ATV, or if it's walking access only. Lots of the places I go to, no vehicle.
Yeah. And it's lots of them are posted now, hey? Like, yeah. On public land?
Yeah.
Like, on Crown land, it'll be, like, no motorized vehicles, yeah. And it'll be posted, too. So.
Yeah, which I'm fine with, because it keeps other people out of there that might wreck it. Yeah. Or it might tear up the land and stuff like that. And it will actually, I think, scare a lot of guys off from going in there. So right. It makes the pressure a little bit less, right? Yeah.
And, like, those areas, too, the way I don't know. I think of it as it's probably there's a reason for it. Like, you can't get your vehicles in there because of, like, ground nesting birds and, like, you know, a bunch of different stuff. Like, it's a habitat for wildlife.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, keep it... as close as you can to that. Like, don't be driving your truck in there. And, you know, there's a bunch of stuff more than just a deer that live in a bush, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, you got the whole ecosystem to think about.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, so we're talking about kind of the etiquette with getting permissions. You know, bottle of whiskey is always good.
Yeah.
What else do we got on that list there? Anything else good?
You know... there's a couple different methods to get permission too. Like we run quite a few paper maps up here. Again, Canada's kind of just a little bit behind the States. I know they're all electronic now and you can get them on your phone and stuff. But the landowner maps and public shows public land, private land and stuff like that. And you can often look people's name up in the phone book and figure out whose land it is and give them a call. But, personally, I like to put a face to a name.
Yeah.
So if I can't get a hold of somebody, like lots of the ranchers and stuff like that, like if you're hunting PFRA or something like that, those guys are working hard, man. They're usually out from sun up to sundown and they might come in for a bite at lunch. But, you know, I've called there and their wives have been, you know, oh yeah, he's out. He should be back around 8:30, 9 o'clock. I can get him to give you a call. And you're thinking, holy man, this guy's working his ass off out there.
Yeah.
So sometimes showing up in person is not.
Showing up in person and doing a handshake goes a long way, I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely outdoors.
Absolutely outdoors. It was funny when we were turkey hunting there, actually, after we kind of blew that first one and we figured we'd go back to that spot that we'd seen that other group of turkeys.
Yeah.
And so we've been up since like 4 a.m. and we have no concept of what time it is. Actually, no. We just figure everybody in the world should be up by now since we've been up for 3 hours. And we roll into this farmyard where we've seen the turkeys, and it's like 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning. And vehicles in the driveway, we go knocking on the door, dogs going buck wild in there. and then I'm standing there thinking to myself, what time is it? And I look at my watch, I'm like, oh my god, it's 7 a.m. I guarantee these people are still in bed. There's no way we're getting permission here.
And even if they're home, we weren't hunting there.
Yeah, this kid comes walking out of the bedroom, he's staring at me through the door, and I'm thinking, all right, time to get out of here.
Yeah.
So we didn't even stick around to see if we got permission, but that's another little learning tip there for you. Make sure you pick the proper time to go in. And
yeah. Don't go during supper time.
Yeah.
And don't go at 7 in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. There's, and like getting permissions too, there's always going to be the no.
Yeah.
Right? Like no. And like you said, I'm going to keep it for myself. I'm going to keep it for my son, my brother, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then there's the other guys like, no, I just don't want hunters there.
Yeah.
And I think that's great, to be honest. Like, it gives the animals somewhere to go.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't need to go hunting on every single piece of land.
It's nice to have those areas. So it's almost like a sanctuary for them where they can get away. Takes the pressure off the animals. Although you're always like thinking, man, it'd be nice to get on that piece of property.
Well, like, I was listening to Meat Eater, one of their podcasts, and they were kind of talking about doing this permission thing, and that Steve Rinell had a good point, is like, well, if you can't get on a piece of land for, say, deer, start off small and ask, like, well, can I shoot some rabbits?
Yeah.
And then start there, and then, you know, maybe next year be like, well, can I shoot a duck? You know, and like see if you can build up some kind of rapport with that farmer.
Yeah.
I think that's some respect.
Oh, for sure. And even like it depends what kind of property you're going on, but like if there's some bush there or something, you could do some like foraging there.
Right.
Can I go look for some mushrooms on your property? Can I go pick like inner lake? There's a lot of high bush cranberries. So in the fall time, you go pick high bush cranberries.
Oh yeah.
Stuff like that.
What do you use those for? Like just same as regular cranberries?
Yeah, you make a jam out of them, or like there's a thing called Kalena.
How's that?
It's like it's almost like a jam.
What did you say?
Kalena, I think it's called, and it's they eat it with pierogies.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds absolutely awesome.
it actually smells disgusting because it smells like dirty socks. Those cranberries.
Or your dirty socks smell like cranberries.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we've made it here before. I'm actually going to try and make some stuff this fall. I've got a couple of recipes up my sleeve. But yeah, so that'd be a good way to kind of get an in with a farmer, so he gets to know you, and you know, don't be the asshole out there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing too, is like when you are getting permissions, go every year. Go and talk to them every year.
Oh, for sure.
Because there's a few things like, especially if you're not too familiar, say, with the agricultural part of it. And I mean, I'm still learning as I'm growing up and getting older, but you know, you're not every year they're going to have the same crops in there. You know, maybe they might not want you to even be on that piece the following year because of a certain crop or whatever. Yeah. Right.
And goes to like access too. Like some years it might be, okay, yeah, go ahead, drive your truck. Or maybe it's wet this year. Or maybe they're planting beans in that field and they're like, No,
exactly.
You know, because beans, they need to have, it's got to be like golf course pretty much, right, to harvest. So, sorry, I think I might have cut you off there.
No, that's fine. That's exactly what I was going to say, the same thing, so.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the guys, too, they just enjoy seeing you around, right? And even, like, even if you're out scouting or something, and in the summertime, it's not even a bad idea to pop in, just say hi and BS with them for a
bit. That's part of scouting, like in my opinion, for me is, when you go scouting in the summertime and you see them in the yard, whatever, feeling up, whatever, monkeying around in the yard, you stop in and say hi and be like, well, I was thinking of maybe hunting here this year. And, you know, it's going to go, it's just going to go a long way.
Yeah, exactly. And you can even go as far as giving the guy a hand with some stuff if you want, you know.
Well, don't get crazy.
Depends how much time you got.
Yeah, I think that that goes a long way for sure.
Yeah, so we'll be doing a lot of that here in the coming weeks, scouting. And
have you started, other than you interested in going up north there for a bit?
No, I mean, I put those trail cameras out in April, I think.
Oh yeah.
But I would like to get some more scouts in for sure. And we have a lot of area that we want to check out. There's so much public land to look at out there. And I think like the bigger herds of elk, I think stick close to the agriculture.
Right.
So we're not hunting these massive herds of elk.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit tougher, and it'd be nice to have a couple good spots to go to.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, there's elk and you can get into them. So,
I've been scouting a little bit, but like not even really scouting. I just like, I don't know what it is. Like two or three times a week, I just get this urge to go for a drive.
Yeah.
Especially when it's nice out, and take the camera and just like go and look at shit, you know?
Yeah.
It was actually pretty cool because I didn't know this, but I went north of Brandon, probably about 4 or 5 miles. And I was coming down this road and I looked and I'm like, holy shit, those are some pretty big deer. Like, I got up closer and there were elk, and I was like, oh, I didn't even know there was elk, like any elk north of Brandon in that area, but apparently there is.
Nice.
So yeah, it's nice just to get out and look at shit.
Yeah.
But if I was like, I hunt around Neepawa, I live in Brandon, but hunt around Neepawa. So if I was around Neepawa a little bit more, I can guarantee you I'd be out basically 2 or 3 times a week.
Yeah.
Scouting my route, I guess, because I have like this designated route I do.
Yeah,
you know,
every year. Nice to get out, man. And it's like everyone always says and makes fun of it, you know, it's just nice to get out there. But it is, it's nice to go for a ride and check out the land. And you know what?
Yeah.
When you see a big buck, you get jacked up.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. That's what I was going to say earlier. It's just like going and checking trail cams. You go and you look at the trail cams, you're like, holy shit, man, I have like 190 pictures.
Yeah.
Holy fuck, I cannot wait to see these big bucks on it and big elk or whatever.
Yeah.
And you get on in there and it's like, oh, that grass moved 150 times. Yeah. That willow moved 150 times.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm so pumped up when I go with Tristan. Like, we bring a laptop with us. And this last time, Tristan was driving. And I was like, sorry, dude. I'm not waiting for you. I got to look through these, like, right now. So as we're driving to the next spot. Like, click, 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 click.
Oh, yeah.
So we got a bunch of deer and coyotes and bears and elk and stuff on them. And it's... That's cool to see what's all roaming through there.
Yeah, for sure. They're always, that's eyes when you're not there, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had, this winter we had, well, up north, not we, but where I go moose hunting, they had a nice little calf, like, walking across the lake.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was pretty, like, it's actually a really good photo, like, for a trail cam. You're like, holy shit, that thing took that, but.
That's sweet.
Yeah. So, yeah, permissions.
Permissions, scouting.
What else can we talk about summertime? There's not much to do other than go fishing.
Yeah,
if fishing, you're not fishing, then, you're scouting.
Yeah, and tuning up your archery skills pretty much is the other thing
you're
doing. So.
Have you been shooting your bow?
Not a lot. Not as much as I want to. Things have been busy.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to try here probably this week. I'm going to grab a target because we usually shoot at Tristan's place, and I might just bring my bow home here and just try and get 15 shots off a night.
Yeah.
Just to get the muscle memory and,
exactly. You know,
go through all the everything, you know, making sure all your checkpoints are there and you're doing everything right, not torquing. And cause if you don't do it for a while, it takes a while to get back into it.
Oh, it does, yeah.
So you just do a little bit every day and you stay on top of it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's well, my old man and I were going to set up a tree stand in his, like, backyard and start practicing out of the tree stand, which normally do.
Yeah.
Like, I normally just stand and shoot. And, but I think getting into the tree stand and getting, you know, 15 feet up in the air will practice a little bit more efficient.
Yeah. When I was guiding, we used to run a tree stand up a telephone pole.
Hydro pole.
Hydro pole, sorry. And we'd have the guys that came into camp with their bows, we'd have them go up there and shoot out of that to the targets. Just, nobody does really practice from elevated areas. And that's the best thing to do is practice in the situation you're going to be in.
Yeah. And the thing is, too, is like when you're up in a tree stand, there's a few things that you don't think about, which I think you should practice doing. And number one is if you take a bag with you and it's by your feet, try that.
Yeah.
So you're not moving your feet, you know. You're not, like, trying to turn or do whatever.
Well, that's a huge thing, I think, when you're hunting on a tree stand. And when you're generally hunting in general with a bow, if there's an animal in on you at 15 yards, you're not going to be able to move your feet.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what I'm saying. Like, you don't, but you don't think of that when you're practicing.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like, okay, I got to hit the fucking bullseye.
Yeah.
That's all you think about.
Yeah.
But you don't think about, like, those little things, right? But, yeah, and then, like, I bought one of those, like, binocular cases that sit on the front
of
Badlands, and you put your binoculars rangefinder. It's actually pretty big.
Yeah,
I think it's really good.
Yeah, and it's so almost like a mini backpack,
basically.
Yeah,
they sit on your front so you can lean up against a tree and not worry about it.
Yeah,
and so I'm gonna start practicing with that, make sure it's not gonna be in the way. Like, there's a bunch of different things you can do differently.
Yeah,
especially if you're gonna, like, go practice bow hunting, like, say, like you said, like 15 shots a day. Great, get that dialed in, and then start picking away at those little things, right?
Yeah,
it'll go a long way, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I think too, like, what I try to do lots is when we're shooting, we set out a couple targets, but we don't set them up at the exact same distance every time. We'll set them out and we don't know exactly where we're putting them,
right?
And they'll be maybe within five yards of each other, and that just kind of gets you familiar with where your bow is going to hit when you're aiming a certain spot too. So if you're shooting, like, we stretched it out to about 60 yards.
Oh yeah.
And so if you go from like 62 to 57, your arrow's losing quite a bit of elevation there, and it's nice to know what's going to happen in between there.
Yeah, and those are things that I don't normally do either.
Yeah.
So it's like good to like, yeah, hear that.
I was actually listening to, I can't remember whose podcast it was.
Randy Newberg?
Randy. It wasn't Randy. It might have been geez, who's that now? Ben O'Brien's.
Who's he, Wired to Hunt?
No, he's the Yeti guy. He's the Hunting Collective.
Yeah.
And I think he was talking about hunting with Remy Warren, I believe. Okay. And he actually practices shooting through like barriers. So if there's like, say there's a deer at 50 yards and there's a bush at 30 yards, you got to know if your arrow is going to make that arc over top to clear, you know, say you can see the deer good enough to put a shot on them, but you don't know if your arrow is going to go through some brush or something, if you're just going to go over top of it.
Yeah. And like, I think that's an amazing idea that I've never thought of doing.
Yeah.
Because I know that's fucked me up.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Same thing. Like when I heard that on the podcast, I was like, damn, I need to try that.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's something else we got to try. Just got to find time to do it.
Yeah. And
it's not only knowing what you can do, like where that arrow's going to be, but it's just like psychological of, you know, it's a different, totally different situation when you're doing that. You can't, you visually can't see the exactly where the deer is, and it just makes it things a little tougher for you.
Yeah.
Mentally.
When I go and shoot, I always do the same thing. Like when I'm getting dialed in, I start 10 yards and I'll shoot 3 arrows.
Yeah.
Is it good? Then I go to 20 yards and I just keep moving back till I get to like, I think my max like is usually around 50.
Yeah.
I'm not usually shooting any more than 40 normally, but if I had to take that 50,
yeah,
I'm not dead on at 50, but I do practice it every once in a while, but I get 10, 20, 30, and 40 dialed like basically right in.
Yeah.
Standing.
Yeah.
But yeah, putting someone like different scenarios would for sure make you think.
Yeah.
You know,
that's why even like, I haven't done a whole bunch of 3D shoots, but you go to those 3D shoots and probably would have helped me out last year in elk season when I took a poke at that cow. But the, you know, shooting when the animal's half covered up or stuff like that. And it's just, even just shooting at a 3D target at an actual animal instead of shooting at a square block, you know, it's different.
Well, like, remember when we were archery hunting down south, me and you for moose?
Yeah.
And I missed that one.
Yeah.
And it was an all day easy shot.
Yeah.
And he was standing in the middle of the field. And I was on the bush line and didn't think of the fucking long grass right in front of me.
Yeah.
And that's what my arrow hit. And
oh, yeah.
I was done. It was over. Like, the hunt should have been over.
Yeah.
But yet, nope, missed them.
Yeah. Oh, that's happened lost with me too. Even hunting deer out of a tree stand, and you shoot and you know, you miss the deer. And it's just like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
And the deer's at 20 yards and it's... the arrow didn't go anywhere close to where you wanted it to go. And then you look around and you're like, okay, yeah, there's a branch hanging down like halfway through that's like not even as thick as a pencil. And threw my arrow off. And it's like, great.
Did I ever tell you that story when we went archery deer hunting down south, southern part of Manitoba with my dad, and how I missed that big buck?
No, I don't think so.
So my dad was kind of scouting that area for a bit, and he's like, hey, he's like, you sit here. The deer are going to come out to feed in this field. And he's like, there's a couple nice bucks in here. Just, you know, I think this is where you should sit.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there and sure enough, like does and calves come out and I look and there's this two bucks coming down the fence line, like right towards me, like 10 yards.
Jesus.
And I'm sitting there watching them and I'm ready. I go to pull and he's standing 10 yards in front of me and I go to, like, how'd that work? There's two bucks. The first one came out and I went to pull back my bow. But didn't have my release done up.
No.
And I shot an arrow like 100 yards straight up in the air. And they both took off. And it had like one of those like aluminox on it.
Yeah.
And I could see it like in the slough. And there was like this aluminox sticking out of the water.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. I was so rattled though.
That sucks.
Yeah, so be prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I've gotten so excited sometimes too. When I first started archery hunting too, and I was seeing like a mediocre buck come out, and I was like, oh my God, this is the biggest buck I'm going to shoot with my bow here right away. To just stay calm, but I just got so jacked up I couldn't even shoot it.
But archery hunting. Fun shit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're just rolling over. Coming to the end here, really.
Yeah, there's not much to talk about when it comes to permissions.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward. Yeah. Basically, I guess why we wanted to talk about it is because there's a lot of guys out there that, A, don't get permission, and B, fuck it up for the rest of us.
Yeah.
So just, like, maybe doing some good is going to go a long way for everyone else.
Yeah, don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy.
Make it better for everybody.
Yeah.
We're all in it for the same thing.
Yeah. And if you're not allowed to be there, don't be there.
Yeah.
And if you got to ask yourself, am I allowed to be here? You probably shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And don't assume. Like, I think that's a big key is don't assume that you're allowed to be on there just because you were there before or got permission before.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest key things are just making sure you put everything on the table.
Yeah.
And don't make that assumption that just because you were there last year, it's not going to, or the previous season.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you got permission, archery, don't be there in rifle.
Right.
Or whatever.
And, and that's the other thing, too, that I probably forgot to mention is if you're going off of a like a paper landowner map or whatever, you know, things change over years.
Oh, yeah, and those aren't up to date.
No, and guys lease, or not lease, but rent out land or do whatever or sell it and blah, blah, blah. So going and talking to these guys is very, very key to knowing where you are and if you're allowed to be there.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. That's all.
Yeah, that's all I got to say.
Yeah, it's getting hot in here. We gotta.
Yeah.
We gotta stop.
Turn this AC back on.
Yeah, exactly. Crack another cold one.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, guys. Everybody out there.
Yeah.
I hope you're enjoying your summer, getting some, ripping some lips out there.
Ripping some neck. Yeah, for sure. And thanks for listening. And make sure you check us out on our social media and YouTube. Check out that. Was it BC Salmon Fishing?
Yeah, Nanaimo Salmon Fishing is called on YouTube.
And under Andrew Panorama. West Coast Tours took you?
Panoramic Outdoors. It's Andrew's West Coast Adventures.
Our adventures.
Yeah, and we're kind of using all the lighthouse lure stuff, so Andrew's kind of hooked up with those guys.
Yeah, they got some pretty nice stuff too, hey?
Yeah, really nice stuff, and like their swim baits and stuff are all reinforced and like he's doing some pretty cool stuff, man.
Yeah, that's good.
So,
Support Canada, support local.
Yep. You betcha.
All right, I'm out of here.
Yeah, me too. Later.